we can actually place customers into service on MTIPS today. So that's a big, huge step for us, the end of a very, very long journey and the beginning of hopefully another journey.
You mentioned place customers in MTIPS today. You guys have gotten a number of customers recently through the networks contract. I know some you can talk about, some you can't, but what is the process about placing customers in? Is it a turn on? Is it a, now it's still 2 months before they can start using the service? Give me some sense of what happens next for those customers that have contracted with AT&T for the MTIP service through networks.
We actually have a couple of customers that are already in service at the facility or using the MTIP service. We couldn't call it MTIPs because we didn't have the authority to operate, but we've been providing those same types of services to those customers. For other customers that want to use the service, it's a provisioning exercise. What it looks like is the customer procures an IP port from us, so it's a connection into the public internet for the customer. Support that we provide is just happens to have additional security features that are part of the MTIP service. So the procurement exercise is going to be very similar to ordering up an IP port.
And how long will that take? I mean, obviously the procurement process itself, but if I'm a customer and I order it today, am I up in a week? Am I up in a month?
The longest time that is involved in the provisioning is actually the provision of the local circuit that connects the customer to the service. And so that can take, depending on what port speed that they order, that can take anywhere from 30 days to much longer if it's a very large circuit that requires construction, like an OC something, OC12, OC48 type circuit. But typically it's going to be between 45 and 90 days.
For those agencies that are already on, nothing changes for them. They just now can be called their MTIPS customers. They meet the trusted internet connection requirements now, versus a week ago they were just got better cybersecurity from AT&T.
We turn on some features that they were not having service from a couple of weeks ago, connections to US CERT, alarms and things like that that go along with the MTIP service. So we do surveillance on the port. We look for security threats and anomalies. And so they'll start to get those notices and alarms now. And they were getting perhaps different notices and alarms prior to us turning the MTIP service up.
Can you give me more examples of some of the features? You said notices and alarms. You know, we're talking about if you find malware, if you find a virus, that type of alarm. Are we talking about more of hackers who are trying to get into the system?
The core part of the service is AT&T's threat management system. And what that does is, the technical term is, it's a multi-vector correlation engine. So what that means is that it takes inputs from different network components and tries to correlate those inputs to say, okay, based on these three things or these five things or these 50 things, here is a threat that we believe is credible. And why that's interesting is, we don't just take industry practices and say we think this is a threat. What we do is we correlate anomalies and threats that we see on our network. And if you look at AT&T's, what we operate for the internet, we operate a very, very large internet service. And so we believe that it serves as a pretty useful proxy for the internet at large, if you will. And so if you take threats that we see on our network, we put those into the correlation engine and we try to identify threats and show them to the customer. The biggest challenge is to eliminate what we call false positives. What you want to do is you want to present the threats to an engineer that says, you know, here's something you need to go and work on. And as many of the false positives that you can weed out, the more you can have those engineers concentrate on things that are actually threats. But usually it's a signature of some sort of an attack. Somebody's probing a particular port on the internet. Somebody's trying to send malware through the internet to the government agency. Things like that.
Are you able to say how many customers you guys have currently?
We've got orders from, I believe, from six customers, and we're in the process, various stages of implementation with those customers.
The other thing you mentioned early on is end of a pretty long journey and beginning of another one. Now, this is something that you guys started almost a year ago or maybe even more.
When the TIC requirements came out, GSA looked at the networks contract and they said, we can make a service like that that satisfies those requirements and put it on the networks contract. And so they issued a statement of work to all of the networks awardees. I think that was probably about 2 years ago. We responded to that and were granted an award. And then we started constructing the facilities. We actually have had the facilities in operation since late last summer. Once we had the facilities in operation, we started the certification and accreditation process, which is the gathering of a lot of information, a lot of security-related processes and procedures. It included physical site surveys by government agencies. And at the end of the day, we identify and they identify risks and appropriate mitigation strategies. And then we have to address those. And then we got to a point where the government said, this is good. This meets all of our security criteria. I think we submitted our first CNA package in the fall of last year.
Roughly, what did this cost AT&T to stand this up? I mean, was this $5 million? Was this $100 million? Can you give me a sense of cost, both in terms of money and maybe effort?
We've constructed facilities in 6 physical locations around the country to do different things. We have redundancy in the places where we actually house the equipment. We have redundancy in where we manage the equipment, and we have redundancy in where we analyze the results. And each one of those has a different physical footprint and requirement for staff. We have to have different types of staff in each place. We have to have internet connectivity. We have to have connectivity to U.S. CERT, and we have to provide quite a bit of reporting and analysis back to the government. It's many millions of dollars.
You mentioned the new services that you're turning on, the changes. Can you quantify how much better this will help agency cybersecurity? Is it 10%? Is it 50% better?
Well, probably the biggest benefit is that it provides consistency. And so before the TIC memorandum came out and before the MTIP services were implemented, agencies, some did very, very extensive cybersecurity measures and some did less extensive cybersecurity measures. It's a government-wide and industry-wide issue. And what this does is it drives a lot of consistency into the process. And so you know exactly how an agency is going to see potential attacks on their network. You know exactly how it's going to be reported to the government by the carriers and by the other MTIPS providers. And that's probably the biggest thing. Does it improve the overall cybersecurity footprint? I would say yes, because of the consistency.